Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to The Athletic Football Show. I'm Robert Mays. Today's Friday, March 4th. Our last day, my last day at the 2022 Scouting Combine here in Indianapolis. And I am thrilled to welcome our draft expert at The Athletic. Man, this is his week. Dan Brugler. Dan, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Robert. This is we really missed this last year. We really did. And so to be back here in Indianapolis, it's been a great week so far. And we've only had one night of testing. So we've got three more nights of seeing these guys on the field. It's you always say you learn more at night than you do during the day. And that I think that holds true every single year. So it's just been a great week.
So we're going to get into what the workouts looked like yesterday, who stood out, who helped themselves, who didn't. But I do want to start with that thought. I was out till about 3 in the morning last night. We're recording this at 9 a.m., so apologies to everyone for whatever my state is and how well I'm doing here. But I got kind of wistful last night on the walk back home to the hotel. You know, for people who don't know, so the way that it currently usually goes at night, a lot of people congregate in one area of town around all the hotels and one of the hotel bars. That shuts down around 1 or so. Lights come up and everyone has that moment of like, all right, are we going to go home or are we going to keep going out? There's a steakhouse across downtown. And if you don't know, I don't even know how I would explain it to someone.
Right.
Yeah, the steakhouse is open till 4 and it's going to be going till 4. And that's what it's like. So you wander over there and you just see people and you have conversations and the whole thing can just be an absolute shit show. And it's easy to get cynical about it. But I kind of felt people being nostalgic about the idea this year and just what it's like here and how perfect the city is set up for the event and how rare it is and just the conversations you can have, because this might be it. Like, this might be the last year that we have this in Indianapolis. And there's a reason it's been here for 35 years, because the city is perfectly set up to do it. The people in the league like it here. Imagine how much inertia an event has to have and how well a place has to be set up for Indianapolis to hold this event for 3.5 decades in the era of TV rights, in the era of primetime testing, as the draft starts moving around. But it really is that good here.
When they built Lucas Oil Stadium, they did so with the combine in mind, with some of the medical equipment at the stadium, with some of the setup, with just how the tunnels work, with the sky bridge and everything. Like, it's winter. It can be cold here in Indianapolis in February, March, but you don't really have to go outside that much.
No,
you could walk inside.
I did not go outside when I walked over here.
Exactly.
My hotel was 3/4 of a mile away.
Exactly. And so it is perfectly set up, just from a functional operation standpoint. But then also, like you mentioned, with the bars and the restaurants and everything, like other cities have that. It's just a little different here. It really is.
It's all self-contained.
It's a convention center. Convention center city,
yes,
is what it is.
100%.
And so it just works really well. And I think also geographically, you know, it's kind of in the center part of the country. So yep, it's easier for everybody from all over the country to come here and it not be, you know, too crazy of a trip. It'll be interesting. I've talked to some people from different cities who are in town bidding on where the combine is going to be in future years. And so it could that be Frisco with the Dallas Cowboys facility at the Star? Could that be L.A.? It could be here in Indianapolis. Indianapolis is still in the running.
That.
So I think that there will be change coming over the next 3 to 4 years, what the combine looks like. But the location, that's very much up in the air.
And there are, you know, a lot of people around the league that I talk to or text with or whatever. It's just different when you can just like run into him at the bar, sit down, how you doing, you know, what about this? I ran into a position coach yesterday who had a coordinator interview this year for the first time. Like, how'd that go? It's like, oh, da-da-da-da-da. Just things that wouldn't happen otherwise when you're not just running into people. And beyond, like, the information trading, I think just the relationship part of the business is so – you can nurture those things here in a really fun way. And I will miss it. I've done it for – I mean, I think this is at least my 10th one.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there were a couple years here and there. My first year was 09. I was a junior in college.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And they'll – back then they couldn't try anyone for this event. I think they probably still will, but I was 21 years old and I'm like, Peter King is in front of me at the coffee line. And at that point, it's the coolest thing in the world. Right. And even now it's very, very different, but I still kind of get a kick out of the little idiosyncrasies that come with this that are unlike any other part of the NFL calendar, unlike anything else we do. And the idea of losing it in this form, it does make me a little sad.
Sure, I know it is. And you can't, like, you just walk down the street or you walk through the convention center, you're going to run into a coach, a GM, a scout, some, like, it's just that everyone's here. And, you know, if that's how you build those relationships, that's how you network, is by coming to an event like this where everybody is here. So it's, I really hope they do keep it here because it's such a great opportunity for all of us. And yeah, you're like you kind of mentioned, they're just more relaxed. You know, they don't have to worry about a game plan. They don't have to worry about you know like if, for the most part, a lot of these GMs, this is a well-oiled machine in terms of, you know, how the interviews go, in terms of how they, you know, watch the drills and everything. It's not something they have to stress over. So this is a relaxing time for them. Some of them probably don't want to be here as long as
it's probably too relaxing for right? some too. Yeah,
exactly. So it's just a great week.
It's always so fun to see the first year head coaches out because their chests are just a little bit bigger. They're standing a little bit head taller. Those are always the guys who kind of own the week socially, and I really respect that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they got a little more pep in their step. it shows very much, and good for them.
Good for them. There's 32 of those jobs. You work your entire life to get one. Nothing wrong with enjoying yourself a little bit when you get to kind of settle into your first off season as a head coach.
That's right.
All right, let's get into the workouts here. Any overarching takeaways from last night? If you just think about the first night of the NFL Combine workouts, primetime Thursday night, what is going to be the first thing you think about a week from now?
Well, you know, a lot of guys ran fast. I think that wide receiver, like corner, is very much a stopwatch position. And so the 40-yard dash, it matters. Now, I think that we need perspective on some of these, you know, fast times. Like, for example, I pulled up the top 10 40 times from 3 years ago. And that was the DK Metcalf, Terry McLaurin draft.
Yeah.
So top 10 wide receiver 40 times from that year, two studs, McLaurin and Metcalf. Then you had two solid depth wide receivers, Mecole Hardman and Darius Slayton. And then you've got four guys that have been disappointments. Isabella's in there, Paris Campbell, Miles Boykin. And then you've got two guys out of the league. So, you know, the 40 times are great. Speed is great. But out of the top 10 from 3 years ago, we only have two guys that are established starters.
That's really good perspective.
So it's important to keep that in mind as we, you know, discuss these fast times. You know, do you think it's almost a disservice? And this is a kind of an NFL Network type of thing, but the unofficial times, how different they were than the quote-unquote official. And I think it's important to point out here, NFL teams don't care about the quote-unquote official times. It's a made-up thing. They're going to use their own hand times.
Why is that? Is it just because it's always been done that way? Isn't there a better way to do this?
The main reason is, so when they use their hand times at pro days, it's similar. So they're not using electronic times here, hand times at a pro day.
Okay. So it's a normalization thing.
Right, exactly. So that makes sense. You know, you want a kind of a level playing field type of thing as much as you can. So, but that's what teams are going to use their own. You know, some teams do it differently. Some teams will have, you know, they'll use two guys that, you know, get the times, and then they'll use the average of those two times. Some will just have one and they use that time. You know, that's what they focus on. So it's different from team to team, but the unofficial times that were broadcast on NFL Network were so wildly different than some of the official times that came out. For a little bit there, we thought Tyquan Thornton from Baylor had set a new record with a 4.21. He ends up with a 4.28, I believe. Chris Olave's time was a 4.26, and he's like, all right, I'm done. I'm drop the mic. I'm 140 time for me, and that's it. And he ends up with a 4.39. So, you know, it's still, even though the times were not as fast as we originally thought, still a lot of these guys were blazing out there.
The Olave thing was just, again, a fun moment, very specific to this type of event, right? He runs it. I'm sitting at the table waiting for people to come to dinner. Deontay Lee from PFF walks in and said, you see Chris Olave ran a 4.26.40. Right. And just watching it kind of spread, and as people find out about it and the chatter that happens, it's very cool. Yeah. It's a very specific thing to what you're doing here.
Yeah.
And obviously it changes, but that like 2 hours when you ran a 4.26 was a really exciting time.
And even for people like you know, us and, you know, people that have watched the tape and have seen him, I put the over under on him at 4.33 before, and so I was
really
like,
so you thought he was going to run really, really fast?
Yeah, he's a 10.8 guy in the 100 meters in high school. Like, speed is his thing, and so I thought 4.33 could he get over under that, and initially thought, oh, well under that, and it turns out he was a little over. Interesting that Garrett Wilson, his teammate, actually ran a faster 40. That was surprising. I thought Garrett Wilson was going to be a solid mid 4.4s, 4.45, a good time, but not blazing. Garrett Wilson was a 4.38, which is awesome for him. Tyquan Thornton, like I said, 4.28. Baylor brought a track team here. They've got a guy every single night that's going to impress. Thornton was last night. Tonight will be the running back. Tomorrow will be the linebacker, Terrell Bernard. And then on Saturday or Sunday will be Kalen Barnes and JT Wood. So Baylor is going to run really well for themselves here. Calvin Austin, 4.32, 5.7, 5.8.
His broad jump is also really impressive.
He's over 11 feet.
Yeah.
The shortest.
He's from Memphis.
And he couldn't get a scholarship to Memphis, so he actually got a scholarship for track. After, you know, a little bit of that, he walked onto the football team, and you know, the rest is history for him.
A little more money in football.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. So, and you know, Danny Gray from SMU ran a 4.33. I think if there's a Darnell Mooney in this class, I think it's Danny Gray.
Okay,
a guy who's got outstanding speed.
Speak my language now.
Maybe a few more drops than you want to see, but gonna go on day three, but could end up outplaying where they're drafted. Christian Watson from North Dakota State had a great showing, 4.36 and a 40-yard dash. He's really, really raw. I think, you know, I don't think people talk enough about that, just how raw he is as a route runner, and you know, everything he needs to do to get better as a receiver. But 38.5 inch in the vert, he was over 11 feet in the broad. So, you know, these guys were really, really impressive, and we know how much they train for this.
Yes.
And that is something that is it's a point of conversation with scouts when, you know, these guys, as soon as their season's over, they go directly to these speed camps and these, you know, whether it's Exos or Michael Johnson Performance, wherever, and just work on these 40s, work on jumps. And they're not necessarily doing a ton of football specific things. And so it is interesting. At some point, are we going to reach that moment where it's like, okay, these guys are just, they're trained so well, and the 40-yard dash is just no longer an accurate representation of what these guys are football speed wise. That we just move away from that, and we just rely on the GPS data. And
it feels like we're trending that way, right?
It does. And yeah. I think, you know, sometime in the next 5 years, I think we're going to reach that point where it's a lot of these drills are going to be obsolete.
Any other big picture takeaways? Was there anything? I know how much you can take from the quarterback workouts is probably debatable, but anything from the tight ends and the quarterbacks that you thought, all right, that's interesting to me?
Well, and one other thing on the receivers is the relative low times for the three cone drill. Three cone drill is my favorite drill of the combine. Yeah, you know, the L drill.
You and Bill Belichick.
Yeah, no kidding. C.O. Brocato, legendary scout who I learned under, he created the three cone drill, and it helps show change direction, you know, your redirection, your movement skills. If you're stiff, you can't escape the three cone drill. Looking at the wide receiver results, only two wide receivers this year had sub 7 second three cone drills. And just for comparison purposes, 5 years ago, 23 receivers had under 7 seconds.
What do you
in
think
three
that
cone.
Could possibly be?
Just focusing so much on the 40, the straight line stuff. I really don't know. And it's not just like this is an off year. Okay, these are the last 5 years. 5 years ago is 23, 18 wide receivers in 2018, 8 in 2019, 4 in 2020, and then 2 this year. It's remarkable that the number has decreased steadily like that over the last 5 years. It's I think there's plenty of maybe different conspiracy theories out there, but I have not one that really makes a ton of sense to me. It's fascinating.
That's really, really interesting. I would be curious if someone did some digging on that, what they would come away with.
Yeah. I think the quarterbacks, I thought, did okay. I don't think anyone necessarily, bombed, and did poorly. Malik Willis, it was a chance for him to show off. He's got that explosive arm. He's got a power arm, can put the ball anywhere he wants on the field. And that showed. So I don't know that necessarily Malik Willis helped himself. It was a chance for him to show off, and he did a nice job. I think it was a chance for some of the younger, but the lesser known guys like EJ Perry from Brown to show what he could do. A guy like Bailey Zappi from Western Kentucky. So some of the lesser known quarterbacks had a chance to go out there and show what they had, and I thought they did well.
Do you think Desmond Ridder running what he ran is something to take note of?
Yes and no. It was expected. I mean, I tweeted before he worked out that he was going to be better than most receivers. He's that type of athlete. But I don't know that he necessarily uses that a lot, on the field. And so it's great that he has the athleticism. I mean, you give me the athletes, no question. But on the field, he's just not that type of rushing threat. He can be when he needs to be. If there's 10 yards in front of him, he's going to take them. It's not necessarily the same when you're talking about Malik Willis or some of these other quarterbacks that rely a little more on their mobility.
Any other receivers that you haven't mentioned that you thought helped themselves a little bit yesterday?
Sky Moore, I thought he ran well. I was told he was going to run in low 4.4s, and he ran a 4.41, so exactly what he's been training at. But I thought when you talk about the position-specific drills, like the gauntlet, love the gauntlet. And that's something that – I was talking to Will McClay about this yesterday, vice president of player personnel with the Cowboys. And how, because he loves the gauntlet as well, because if it just shows your ability to your quick reaction time.
Sure.
So you're looking one way, you catch the ball, you have to look the other way, and if you could watch and just see like a hint of stiffness in their neck, or if they're just a tad late picking up the football, you can pick up these things with the gauntlet. And so I think it's a fascinating drill. Sky Moore was outstanding. From Western Michigan. This is a guy that was a quarterback and a cornerback in high school. Goes to Western Michigan and turns into this receiver who the ball reaction skills are outstanding. He had a lot of slants on his film and quick hitters, and he's reacting to the football away from his frame consistently catching the football. So I think Sky Moore coming in, he was my wide receiver 9 and I think somewhere in the 60s in my overall, and he's moving up. I mean, he's going to be somewhere probably in the second round, and it's more of a question of, okay, does he get into the top 50 or not? Ideally a slot receiver, but I think he could play outside as well.
The two guys that my receiver tastes have become like a parody of themselves with people around, and the two guys that people kept saying to me, when you really dig into this, you're going to like, were Sky Moore and Chris Olave. So yeah. It feels like both those guys did pretty well last night.
And Chris Olave is just so easy to appreciate as a wide receiver. He's so smooth. I feel like you can't talk about Chris Olave without using the word smooth, because everything he does is just it's very footwork, his catching skills. The only thing that I don't love about Olave is he's not an after the catch guy. Like he's not a tackle breaker. You don't necessarily see that speed after the catch, and so that's why. Like, I like Garrett Wilson more, his teammate. That's why, I've got Treylon Burks rated higher. But Olave is a first-round slam dunk, great player, easy player that you want to add to your offense and think you're going to get better.
I was talking to a scout from a playoff team yesterday that told me he would do terrible, terrible things to have Chris Olave on the team that he works for.
And he's the epitome of a pro. He's ready to – he 4 years at Ohio State, so he's ready to come in and contribute. I talked to Jameson Williams, the Alabama receiver who was at Ohio State, about Olave, and he calls him his big brother. Garrett Wilson, same type of thing. Ryan Day gushes about him. I mean, everybody that's met Chris Olave speaks so highly of him as a person, not even necessarily as a football player, and he's a really good football player. Nobody in Ohio State history has more touchdown catches, and the Buckeyes have produced some pretty good receivers.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big juicy investment. That's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
What did you make of Treylon Brooks' workout?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Yesterday morning I tweeted that I put the over-under on his 40 at 448. And I got a lot of responses. I probably... 99-1 responses, way under. So expectations were, at least from fans and from a lot of, you know, us on the media side, we're thinking low 4.4s. You know, he's at 225, and he ran a 4.55. And I think that it was a little higher than I expected. Low 4.5s, I thought, was very much in the realm of possibility for him. But 4.55, that was a little surprising. And then high number in the 3 cone, not what you want to see. Vertical was not great with 33 inches. So the lower body explosion, the jumps were not where you want it to be for a guy that you're talking about in the conversation for wide receiver one. After the season, towards the end of Arkansas season, he was at like 240 pounds. So a big point of emphasis for him the last month or two has been losing weight, getting down to 225. And I think that has cut into his training a little bit in terms of posting the best numbers possible for him.
You look at it. I mean, all the Debo comparisons coming into this and like how teams would be using him. Debo had a 39-inch vertical.
Yeah, before the Debo comparisons became like all the rage. You know, that's how he played, and that's kind of how I said it back in October. He was a linebacker-sized Debo Samuel on the field with how he's used. And it kind of got away from us because he's not that type of explosive dude. The most important thing, and I don't have this data yet, is the flying 20 with Treylon Burks, because he's a little bit of a slow starter, mm-hmm. but that between 20 and 40 in the 40 yard dash, that's where he is special for 225. That's where he can run away from guys, because you don't see him. Nobody catches him on film. Nobody in the SEC had more explosive plays, plays of 20 plus yards. Nobody in the SEC had more plays than him, explosive plays than Burks, than he did last year, is like 21. So he has the juice. It's just there were a couple contributing factors to why he didn't necessarily show it this week.
I was talking to a head coach who's in the wide receiver market, potentially, I think, in the first round. We were just talking about the group in general, and there's a lot of enthusiasm about the group. And it's different than last year, where I think you had a lot of sameness between guys in that top 50-ish range, right. guys that were smaller, not necessarily slot options, right? Like Elijah Moore can play outside, but still a smaller right, receiver. Right. Now you have guys of all different persuasions and varieties. You know, a lot of guys that are in that 190 range, but their play styles are different. You know, London is obviously a very different physical kind of skill set. So it was one of those things where I think the team, this team in particular, had a lot of them graded in a similar range. It's just about what you want. Right. And I think it's why the position is so fascinating, right? There are certain benchmarks, like with tackles, you're mostly going in one direction.
Right,
you need to hit
right.
this, and this benchmark, and you can talk yourself into a guy with 33-inch arms, but they all hit certain thresholds. Receivers, you can make an impact at so many different frames, so many different body types, so many different play styles, and I think this class specifically, as I dig into it a little bit further, is really going to exemplify that.
Yeah, different flavors, and really, yeah, we could have a number of subcategories under wide receiver, you know, with what these guys offer. If you're looking for a slot only, an inside guy, if you want a guy that can play you know, inside, outside, if you want a guy that's, you know, more of your possession target or your deep threat. And there's so many different types of receivers. And, yeah, this draft class, no exception with what it offers. So I think that's why, in my opinion, Garrett Wilson's a top guy, is because I think he can do a little bit of everything inside, outside. Not the biggest guy, but he plays so much bigger than he looks because the body control is elite. And I don't use that lightly. So, you know, for me, that's why Garrett Wilson's and he ran a 4.3. So I think he checked a lot of boxes. But yeah, now it's we didn't see Drake London be able to work out. He's still working his way back from his injury. And he doesn't have his pro day until April 6th. So we're going to have to wait over a month now to find out exactly, you know, and not that it should matter that much, you know, what he runs on a stopwatch in terms of are you going to draft him or not. But it's a piece of context that's nice to have, especially for a guy like Drake London, who's not a burner. That's not how he wins. That's not his specialty as a wide receiver. That's not why you're drafting him early. But still, it's nice to have that piece of information.
Was there a tight end or two that you think helped themselves last night that did particularly well?
Yeah, the Maryland tight end Chig Okoronkwo, who did not play at all last year. He had a heart condition. Non-COVID related, but it was a heart condition, scar tissue, and so comes back this past year as a senior, and he got better as the season went on. The Penn State tape really stands out. He had like 12 catches in that game, and then he comes here and he runs a 4.5. He looked really good at the Shrine Bowl as well, so I think he helped himself. Jelani Woods from Virginia, that I think he really helped himself. He's got a really interesting background because he was a quarterback in Georgia in high school. He had offers from Michigan. He had offers from a lot of different places. He decides to go to Oklahoma State. They move him to tight end. He plays kind of their cowboy back type of position in that offense. After 4 years, graduates, decides to transfer, goes to Virginia, led the ACC in touchdown catches among tight ends this past year. Really had a breakout year, his best year as a college player. Goes to Shrine Bowl. And the momentum just continues. He had a great week out in Vegas. And then he comes here, 6'7", 253, ran a 4.61 in the 40-yard dash. So he was moving. And then also he had 24 reps on the bench press. I mean, the bench press, I think, is very, very overrated. But I think it does help show the guys that spend time in the weight room.
Yeah.
You know, and this is – he has 34.5-inch arms. So really good arm length. And he put up 24 reps on the bench press. There will be offensive linemen here who do not have 34.5-inch arms. They're smaller than that. And they did not get 24 reps on the bench press. So I thought Woods really helped. And the position drills on the field, caught the ball well. So Woods coming into the week, I think, was my tight end 9. And I think he's maybe, you know, moved up a little bit with how he performed.
Was there a receiver, too, that you think stumbled a little bit, that did himself no favors last night?
We mentioned Treylon Burks, 33 vert, 7.28 in the three cone. It's not DK Metcalf numbers in the three cone, but still, it's not, you know, you expected a little bit better for a guy like that. Even at 225, I think you expected better. So that was not ideal for him. I don't know that anyone necessarily hurt themselves. I really don't think the combine is like that. I think it's more of you can help yourself. There were a couple guys that did not run well, like a David Bell from Purdue, who we knew was not going to run all that great. He that's not his game. He's not explosive. And going back to August when I, you know, came out with my wide receiver rankings before the season, and David Bell was like eighth, ninth, whatever. I, Purdue fans, let me hear it, because this guy's. And I kept telling him, listen, he's good. He's just not the explosive guy. And it what we saw on tape showed during the drills. He's not an explosive guy. 4.65, 40-yard dash. The other drills, 33 in the vert, 7.14, 3-cone, under 10 feet in the broad. So the numbers kind of match what we saw on tape. So I don't think David Bell necessarily hurt himself, but it kind of confirmed what we already thought.
Who surprised you the most, any position? Somebody that you want to go back to the tape after seeing what they did over the last couple of days?
I think that we could probably Alex Pierce from Cincinnati. Like, I knew he was a good athlete. He was on Bruce Feldman's freaks list. This is a guy that in high school, big-time track star, could have gone to college to play volleyball. He's that type of athlete. But seeing him move out there, he looks different. He looks like a different type of guy. And 6'3", 211, ran a 4.33 in the 40-yard dash, which is just moving. 40 and a half in the vert. And then 10.9 in the broad. So explosive guy. Ritter and Pierce, those two really had a connection this past year for Cincinnati. I want to go back and make sure, because he's more of a guy that will go downfield and dunk on you, you know, with that vert and that ability to make plays, go up and get the football. But with that speed, I want to see just go back and make sure, you know, there's not more meat on the bone with him in terms of if you expand the route tree a little bit, if you know that he can do more than just be that vertical threat, be that comeback threat, the linear athleticism. So I do want to go back and see more on Pierce just to make sure what I saw is what he is based on these numbers.
Any other workout takeaways? Anything else you want to mention before we get some more general chatter from what the week has been?
I think that the quarterbacks, you know, I think we have to mention Kenny Pickett, just how I thought he looked good, kind of checked the box. Mm-hmm. Didn't necessarily wow, but his arm looked, you know, is plenty, you know, live enough. His 40s, his workouts were fine. I don't really. Once you, for most quarterbacks, if you're somewhere between, you know, the 4.6 and the 5.1 range, it's fine. You know, you don't really get too excited about it either way. So Kenny Pickett, I thought, checked that box. I don't think he did anything to move the needle necessarily, at least on the field. Maybe the interview process will be different. Ritter helped himself. I thought he threw the ball well. Sam Howell looked like he threw the ball fairly well. Carson Strong, same thing. So a lot of these quarterbacks, I thought, just came here, checked the box, did well for themselves.
As you've talked to people just about the class in general this week, what's the general conversation been like about this group as a whole?
Speaking about the quarterbacks?
Just in the class in general, any position.
I think, well, quarterbacks always come up. So, yeah, you know,
let's start there.
Yeah,
that's
we have
fine.
To start there. And what I keep coming back to is, and what I've kind of asked some of these guys is, do you see any of these quarterbacks being a top 12 to 15 quarterback in the NFL at some point in their rookie contract? Do you see that happening? And I get a lot of, like, I don't get an immediate, oh yeah, yeah, I do. It's always, you know, it's like physically paining them to think about it, whether or not it could happen. And if that's the case, how are you drafting one of these guys in the first round? You know, like, if you don't believe that there'll be a top 12 to 15 quarterback in the NFL at some point during their rookie contract, how can you justify drafting one in the first round? But we'll see these guys go in the first round. It's going to happen, especially after the dust settles with free agency and the trademark and everything. It's going to be a lot of probably nothing. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo maybe gets moved, but, you know, Russ is staying put. Aaron Rodgers likely staying put. I don't think we're going to see this massive exodus of quarterbacks and movement. So it comes down to the draft in terms of what's Washington going to do? What are the Colts going to do? Steelers. So we're going to see quarterbacks in the first round. It's just, I'd be scared. Really, really scared if my team needed a quarterback in this draft class.
You guys are hearing the ramp up here to the bench press behind us, so if it gets a little bit loud, apologies for that. This isn't a shared workspace where we're all recording audio or anything. So the quarterbacks, I talked to two play callers last night.
Okay.
One of them said, I like two of the guys. This guy is, let's say what this team is softly in the quarterback mm-hmm. market. It was Pickett and Willis.
Yeah.
I was like, those guys could not be more different mm-hmm. As far as I understand it in terms of what you're looking for. And that was kind of the conversation.
It's also a ceiling floor argument.
That's
know?
Exactly what it is.
Right.
And so you're looking at Willis. And I think that the appeal to Willis with some of these teams is that 10% chance.
Yeah.
when you're looking at the guys you have to beat, especially in the AFC, that 10% chance is going to be worth a dice roll to somebody. Just the physical talent, what he can eventually become, is going to entice someone. The other play caller that I talked to, they are in the quarterback market. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is an allure of what Willis's physical talent is going to give you. And I'm curious which team ultimately is going to say, in this class, with our level of desperation, with the other available options, he's worth a top 12 pick.
Right. And we've talked about it before. You know, you need a superhero trait if you're going to compete with the best of the best, the quarterbacks in the NFL, especially if you're in the AFC. And, you know, a guy like Malik Willis gives you something like that because he is so electric, not only with his legs, but his arm. And so the biggest thing with Willis is trying to figure out, okay, when is he going to be ready to play? Because, you know, you talk to his coaches at Liberty and you get a sense for what he was asked to do. And it's just, it's nowhere close to what he's going to be asked to do in the NFL. Even if you, you know, really just change the playbook to accommodate him. And it's, again, it's not that he can't do it. It's just, it's going to be wildly different what he's going to be asked to do in the NFL compared to what he's asked to do in college. So can he get there? Yeah, absolutely. That is a realistic scenario that Malik Willis will be able to, because he's a sharp guy. You talk to him and you come away impressed, you know, not just with the character and the guy that he is, but with, you know, just the way you can tell that, you know, he processes things and the way he, you know, speaks and everything. So you walk away from talking with him thinking, yeah, this guy's impressive. And so I think he'll do pretty well during the interviews. It's just, what's the projection? Is he ready to play in year two? I don't think he's ready to play as a rookie. I'd be shocked. Year two, maybe, or you have to wait till year three. Trying to figure that part out is part of the conversation.
Have you gotten a sense for what the top five might look like? Where guys sit in that hierarchy? If there's a certain flavor that teams might like, what has the chatter been around that for the people that you've with the people that you've talked about?
So you told me like the top five overall.
Yeah.
The Jaguars at one. It really seems, you think about Coach Peterson, he's going to want an offensive lineman there.
I think so too.
And the way that this draft class is shaping up, I think it comes down to Ike Ekwonu and Evan Neal. I think it's another ceiling floor argument. I think if you're going a conservative route, you're taking Evan Neal. You know, a guy who's been a 3-year starter at Alabama, started at three different positions. You know, you feel really good about who he is right now. If you're going with more of the ceiling, I think Ike Ekwonu is your guy. He's the best run blocker in this class. And the strides that he made this year as a pass protector are really, really encouraging. That's why he's my top offensive lineman in this class. And I think that's what a lot of teams talk about. So it just comes down to which one the Jaguars prefer. And then whichever offensive lineman doesn't go one, good chance they go four to the Jets. Because both these guys can play guard, and the Jets, they're looking for someone. We'll see what happens in free agency, but ideally someone that can step in and play right guard as a rookie, and then probably be the long-term right tackle, maybe left tackle, depending on how the Becton situation works out. And that's something that I think both these guys can offer. And I think they'd be happy with either Evan Neal or Ike Ekwonu falling to them at number four. This just seems, it's almost like, Hutchinson's too perfect there that it's not going to happen. But, you know, aside from the whole Michigan connection and everything, it gives, you know, the culture that they're trying to build there with Coach Campbell, Hutchinson just fits it to a T. And Hutchinson's going to blow it up tomorrow when he works out on the field. His agility numbers that he's been testing at are unreal. So Hutchinson at two. Texans at three are a wild card because, you know,
everyone has said that. No one has any idea. It's really funny
because they're, you know, put a list of their needs and it's just everything.
And also, you can't ascribe traditional thinking to anything they do.
No, you can't. And does Laremy Tunsil get traded? Does Brandon Cooks get traded? You know, this is going to be a kind of a weird offseason for them. A guy like Kyle Hamilton makes sense, but for a team that needs so much, can you draft a safety there? You know, like he might be the best player on the board when they pick, but that's hard to do. Kayvon Thibodeau, this is a big week for him in order to prove the teams that, hey, I care about football. I care about being the best football player I can be. Yeah, I do care about my brand, and that's fine. You know, a lot of players in the NFL care about their brand. But more than anything, I care about being the best football player I can be. And he needs to prove that this week. There's a lot of teams that are, you know, on the brink of being out on Thibodeau just based off of my conversation. So that'll be a fascinating thing to watch with him.
What's the most interesting thing you heard about a prospect this week? Just one of the nuggets that it's going to stick with you based on the conversations that you've had.
Well, maybe just recency bias because, you know, I talked with Devontae Wyatt this morning. He's a really, really engaging guy, and it's fun talking to him. He said, just wait till I work out tomorrow. He said, you know, the eye emoji? He's like, yeah, that's what everyone's going to be like after I work out. So fun talking to him. I think he's the best defensive tackle here. Best three technique in the class. He should test very, very well. So I think, you know, that was fun talking to him. Really, I think you go position by position. There's something interesting with all these guys. You know, some of these receivers have been fun to talk to. Sky Moore, just talking about his evolution as a receiver. Like I mentioned before, he wasn't a receiver in high school. So he's really had to learn and grow at that position. You know, talking to the Ohio State kids, Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, how locked in they are. Ohio State's, you know, produced some pretty good receivers in past years. And these two are the next guys. So yeah, I think that, just being able to talk to some of these players in a more informal setting has really been beneficial.
As you've talked to scouts, coaches, whoever over the last week, are there guys that you feel like there's a feeling around, there's a consensus around them that's far away from what you initially thought, people that you wanted to go back and watch after you started talking about them on the ground here?
There's not a consensus on a lot of these players that I thought maybe there would be, or, you know, I thought for sure that teams would, you know, really like this player or that player. So it is interesting that like a Drake London, like there are some teams that really like him. There's some teams that are like, I don't need a contested catch receiver in the first round. You know, like that's not what we're looking for. That's not what we would ever value in the first round. And so Drake Lund is a really good player. So I was surprised by that to hear some teams were maybe lower on him than others. I'm looking through my list here. I think that the corners are wide open at the top in terms of the orders. Trent McDuffie from Washington, top corner for some teams. Sauce Gardner, top corner for some teams. Derek Stingley, top corner for some teams. This is a big week for Stingley as he gets FaceTime with these teams to say, hey, the guy you saw in 2019, the All-American that helped, you know, win the national title, I'm still that guy. And because it's the last 2 years have not gone according to plan, and medicals are a big part of that. And we'll see, the medicals are a big part of this week, how the medicals go for him, but more so the interviews. So the top of the cornerback position has been very, very split when you talk to different teams. Offensive tackle as well. I think Ikem Ekwonu and Evan Neal are the top two guys. And then after that, a lot of different opinions between a Trevor Penning, a Charles Cross. The lack of consensus on a lot of these players. I guess we get that every year just because teams look for different things. And, you know, every set of eyes sees something different. But especially this year, the lack of consensus on a lot of these prospects that I think the general, you know, consensus or the fans think that, oh, yeah, he's a top 10 pick or he's a top 20 pick. The consensus is not there among NFL teams.
As the bench press gets ready to go here, as it's going to ramp up, anything else you want to mention? Any other takeaways from the first few days or from the week that you feel like people should know about?
No, I'm excited for tonight to see the offensive linemen on the field. It's great to see these guys in person just move around, even if they don't have pads on, even just their movement skills. One of my first combines back in 2013, seeing Eric Fisher and Luke Jokel back-to-back in order because it's alphabetical order. Seeing those guys back-to-back, I walked out of Lucas Oil that day saying, yeah, Eric Fisher's going to be drafted higher than Luke Jokel. And at that time in February, Luke Jokel was supposed to be the guy. And just seeing them move was just very, very different. And so I think there's a lot of benefits from just seeing these guys and how they move in shorts and a T-shirt, even though it's not a traditional football setting. So being able to see the offensive linemen, running backs tonight, that'll be a big thing. Defensive linemen tomorrow. And then the defensive backs on Sunday. So we still got a couple days here left at the combine, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's it for me. I'm about to drive home. If this is the last one, I'm pretty bummed out about it. I would love if this was back here next year. Either way, it was great to see you. It was great to do this. Enjoy your next couple days here in Indy, and we'll chat next week.
Awesome. Thanks, Robert.
All right, guys, that's all we got. Please subscribe to The Athletic, theathletic.com/football show. $1 a month for the next 6 months. Me and Nate will be back on Tuesday, so please come back and check that out as we ramp up our free agency coverage. As always, guys, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
This was The Athletic Football Show.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.